come in and sit with us. We're four friends, talking, thinking, and laughing. We take on the absurd and the profound, sometimes both at once.
And we speak about aging because, oh, yes, we're living it, feeling it in our bones. First time for all of us.
And we don't plan to go quiet. We prod, we tease, we wander down strange roads. A story here, an argument there, a joke, maybe a truth.
Dylan Thomas said it best, "Do not go gentle into that good night." We won't. We'll burn, we'll rage, we'll keep moving. We'll take care of each other as we go.
Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick.
This is episode one of Seniors in the Building, and I'm Elaine, and I'm your host for today's podcast, and joining me are...
I'm Signe.
Jack.
I'm Rick.
So, how is it that four seniors finding themselves in a world... How is it that four seniors find themselves in a world of technology, working through the minefield of apps we've never heard of before, language that seems odd, and viewing way too many YouTube videos? And yet, we find ourselves in this place called podcasting. We've laughed amongst ourselves at how absurd this feels, and yet when we told family and friends it was something we were considering, we received much encouragement. Encouragement to do something new, like be an old dog learning new tricks. And when we asked questions from people who are experts in the field or know a little bit more than we do, they quickly responded with good advice and encouragement just to keep at it. So here we are, episode one. And we'll note that there will be an ever-changing facilitator or host to our conversations for each episode. And today I've invited each of us to reflect on how we came to be in this place, in this time of being seniors in the building. And so today I thought maybe we'd start with you, Signe, and maybe you can recall how we got to this place or anything in your thoughts about being in a podcast together.
For the last year, the four of us, last year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Over.
Last September, yeah.
We have been having breakfast on average every week, sometimes... Well, Elaine and Rick decided they would do some work, and so they were gone for a while, but we would always come back and have breakfast. And over the course of the breakfast, we realized that our conversations were going from the wildly chaotic and hilarious to profoundly deep. And we thought that it would be a lot of fun and meaningful, maybe for others, if we started a podcast.
Great. Rick?
Well, sort of just building on that. Yeah, when we met and reconnected after years being in different parts of the country, we found we had a lot in common. And we found that often we could, even when we disagreed, we could do so with a congenial way and a way to... listen to each other as well as share our wisdom. Sometimes that meant sharing the kind of research we'd done or reading we'd done, so it was not just all opinionated blather. There was also some real insight that we felt that we were sharing with each other, and again, so we thought we could perhaps widen the scope of who was hearing what we had to share.
And I also think sometimes some of the conversation, maybe Jack, you can speak to that too, is we talked about, well, really, what is our purpose now? I mean, we gather around the table for breakfast every week and we try to engage in the world events out there. But, you know, really, what else are we looking for as seniors in the building?
Well, that's a good question. This is an experiment, so we're not quite sure what we're doing yet. But we do made a list of topics that we'd like to address over the coming weeks, and hopefully they'll intersect with interests that you, our listeners, have, and that seniors generally have. We struggled in the beginning, and you may be hearing it here now, with technological issues as to how to set up a four-person podcast, And I personally found that very frustrating, but I'm trying to get over it. And we'll see how this experiment goes. Our conversations around the breakfast table have been magnificent and life-giving, I think, for all of us. And we'd like to share that with you.
And we, the four of us, come from distinctly different kinds of environments in our previous life before we all retired. And so sometimes our perspectives come from that experience that we've had. And it's been good to be able to be honest with one another and tell each other some of the struggles that we've experienced and also some of the joys that have been there. And I know we talked about this podcasting in terms of technology because we started out not quite figuring out how the phone worked or the calendar worked or how many other places have we struggled with in terms of technology.
Well, just even in what kind of technology to use, what actually will work and what won't work.
Yeah.
And lots of trial and error and lots of frustration. Anyways, but here we are, and hopefully old dogs can learn new tricks.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts about that, how we're dealing with technology today?
Well, yeah, I think it just reflects how people are in general. I mean, if you think of the pandemic and the Zoom education system that had to operate in North America, a lot of people struggled. I mean, teachers struggled, students struggled. You know, as a retired minister, I was still active at the time, struggled in trying to put together services or presentations, and a lot of it wasn't fun. And some people were really traumatized by that and still feel those effects today. So I guess dealing with new technology isn't a surprise, and that it's difficult or traumatic.
I was just reflecting back to when I was working in healthcare and how we went from regions to one big provincial healthcare entity, and all of our work was virtual. All of our work was over the internet, and we didn't see each other, but we heard each other, and very rarely, occasionally, you met some of those people that you were working with closely, and it feels the same here. It feels as though I know there are people going to be out there listening to us and finding that way to communicate, and because you have to communicate differently.
Yeah, exactly.
And express clearly what you're thinking and clarify things, and so hopefully we'll learn as we go.
But what plays into that too is like memory loss, right? And we find we've lost the keys or we've lost the car or whatever, you know, in the parking lot. And so technology sometimes throws us off, right? It kind of gets us, you know, a little bit more anxious than maybe perhaps our younger family members handle, right? That they, I don't know, Jack, you're smiling there. So
yeah, I can talk to the issue of memory loss. Though I like to think of it in terms of cognitive decline. I taught for 30 years at the university level in religious studies. And in being retired, a strange thing is happening, and that is that I'm becoming more distanced from what I used to do, such that at times I can't imagine that I'd even done it. But anyway, so having a PhD and accumulated so much, I think, information, I don't know if I'll call it knowledge. It would be nice to have a forum by which to continue to share that, as limited and fading as it is. So that's partially what the reason for my wanting to do the podcast is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess tying in with that, I think sometimes in our society now there's a sense that you know, seniors really have very little to contribute, especially if they are retired. And it's been well documented that this concept where elders carry wisdom that people should pay attention to, that's kind of gone by the wayside. And so then a lot of us just get grumpy and cranky and miserable because nobody listens to what I want to say. And that's a bit of a reality. But maybe what we feel here is that we have something significant to contribute, and that, you know, our usefulness, use quotes, air quotes there, is not gone. That there is some kind of forum, some kind of niche, some kind of area where we are able to really, you know, be meaningful. And, you know, sometimes you'll hear that when we get into some of our conversations down the road, maybe about politics or about society, or about kids these days or whatever. There'll be wisdom, hopefully, not just, as I said earlier, blather. Yeah.
So Rick is inspiring me at this moment, which is great.
Good.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about that as well. And maybe because I've had to work with a fair number of retirees over the years who have expressed that concern, right? That their knowledge is no longer valuable, or their the wisdom that they want to share, you know, it's not welcomed as much. And yet my experience in retirement has been nobody's asking for my wisdom or my knowledge. They want my presence, right? They want me to walk with them, to be there if they've, you know, got to vent on something or to talk about it, to journey with them. And so maybe the new task for seniors is actually to be good listeners, to hear what society's, you know, well, there we go. That's the way we handle things, right? We drop things, loosen up, kind of. But I think, yeah, I think some of that, you know, is an inspiration too, right? That we might not be the talkers in society anymore, but we are the listeners in, you know, we're to be the listeners in society. And sometimes we are asked to reflect back what we've seen and heard. But I think we also need to be good listeners to what's going on in our world as well.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. But in addition to that, sometimes when we get to this age and feel we're not heard or valued, then we become very reactionary and very hostile and negative, and express that at, say, the ballot box, or express that in how we interact with family and friends. And I think that's something we also need to think about and be aware of and try to manage that or avoid that.
It occurred to me that one of the things that I've found as a retiree missing in my life is institutional affiliation. And I think for all of us, that's the case. We have distanced ourselves to some degree, to varying degrees amongst us, from the institutions that gave us a forum by which to offer our knowledge and wisdom. And that's gone. So the podcast is a wonderful technological means by which to continue to share what we've worked so hard on in terms of accumulating information and hopefully a minimal amount of wisdom as well.
You don't think you're wise, Jack?
I think so, I'm worn out.
Yeah.
Well, as my mother always says, aging is not for the faint of heart. She's 90, 91.
Oh, that's right,
yeah. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, because it is a struggle to kind of know your place in the world. But sometimes we also have to think about, well, is it about us, right? Because we have had a privileged life being seniors here that can retire and not be in poverty.
For sure.
You know, those kind of things. So I have to keep reminding myself that there's more to this than what I think about myself anyway.
And, I mean, we all have children that we are close to and in proximity to, and so there are those pieces of still parenting, but in, as Elaine said, in a very different way, by listening, by standing with, by sharing when asked, for opinion.
Yes, yeah.
But it's allowing children to live their lives without interfering with them and being there when they need us.
Right.
And that's a very different place to be in at this stage, because that's as a retired person, that's also how I don't often feel this, but sometimes I do feel marginalized from that rich work life, or that rich sort of being engaged in something that's very profound or very meaningful or is going to make a difference. And I think that for me has been what is missing in retirement, mm-hmm. is that sense of continuing to contribute somehow.
Right. Well, and I think, you okay if I, yeah, I think I could speak to that in some respect too, because when I retired, I ended up doing more things with my grandchildren, like picking them up from school and taking them to their activities and things. And so, you know, at first I was like, well, I guess I'm the second or third driver in the family, right? And sort of minimizing that. And then it occurred to me that for the first time in a very long time, I'm an important cog in that family system, right? That I wasn't, I had fully forgotten about that, because in my own childhood, I had a grandmother who lived in our home who, you know, cooked and baked and did things to help my mother so she could go out to work, you know? And so I still think about that value that I had with the time with that grandmother in my early days. And so in some ways, my most profound work has been in the car driving my granddaughters to their piano lessons, because the conversations we have, I would have never had with my grandmother. And the technology that they know and they use enabled me to learn a lot about their music styles, about what's going on in the world of tweens and now teenagers, because they're teenagers. So I had to search for that, what is profound in my life, you know, and I think that's part of it, right? What are those profound moments?
Exactly.
Well, I just wanted to pick up a bit on that, because, you know, when you talk about finding our way, I think, and what you were saying, Elaine, connecting with teenagers and young adults, I think they're in a similar place, right? And maybe everyone in society is really worried about finding their way and finding their sense of purpose and meaning. And so maybe we're not a whole lot different from, say the teenagers who are looking at all these options and choices, but hearing all the negative doom and gloom that's on the news and on social media. And so maybe there is something that we share in common, and we need to be aware of that and see the connection rather than the disconnection between, say, generations.
I think I'm in a different place in terms of grandchildren. Our grandchildren are quite young still, but I have never been really sort of innately, instinctively wanting to reparent yet over again with kids, as much as I love them both. What I have wanted to do, and I think this is a common experience for elder people, and that is to travel, to explore, to reach out. But when I turned 70, the wheels came off in terms of health, and I had all kinds of health issues. And now that many of those, though not all, are resolved, I want to go and travel and explore, because I know the world is out there waiting for my presence. No, that sounds egocentric. But sounds there's good. So much to be seen in the world. And so my interests remain, and I think it's always been the case, international relations, the conflicts that are happening around the world. And as a philosopher, theologian, I'm always wondering about the big questions, exploring how it is that we're here on this fragile planet, and now especially with the issue of climate change, threatening not only our existence, but the existence of all of life on Earth. So the climate change front is a hot topic one for me, continuously. Mm-hmm. As well as religions and how religions around the world, no matter West or East, or indigenous, to some degree have resources, but maybe are yet to be fully drawn upon. That's putting it positively, rather than thinking of them as being impediments to change.
Yeah, well, they can be both, I think, that's for
yeah,
sure.
That's true.
Yeah, so I was just going to pick up a little bit on the travel thing, because both Elaine and I love to travel and get out there and explore. But one thing we found, as our grandchildren have gotten older, we've sometimes had them accompany us on trips in that. And then sometimes the learning takes on a whole different aspect. You know, we took that road trip through the Rockies a couple of years ago with two of our grandchildren, and the things we would notice, the things they would notice, like we grew up in British Columbia, they grew up here in Winnipeg. So getting into the Rockies and the mountains, and just the fascination and the awe that they had is something we go, yeah, we grew up with it, we got kind of used to it, but it's really amazing, and all the different questions. So at a certain point, our travel, I think, was enhanced by having them be part of it and be with us.
I think a second piece of that was when we took everybody, the whole family, to Normandy and watched the granddaughters walk through the Canadian cemetery and yelling out the ages of the soldiers who had died. And, you know, and then going into this conversation about how, you know, they're only 5 years older than me, Grandma. And so then we had to talk about, well, what does it mean to go to war? And so in some ways, our new task is also to be the storytellers of what's happened in the world or what is happening in the world, and help them develop a perspective, too, of how are they going to live in the world, in a world of war, right? I mean, because we are not, you know, we're not going to be able to avoid it. So.
Well, yeah, they hear of conflict all the time now. It's going on a lot, so it's there.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's one of the things. I just might note that our grandchildren are young. They're 5 and under. And there may be more to come. Who knows? And Rick and Elaine's grandchildren are 13 and...
14 and 20.
Yeah. 14 and 20. So they're there are gurus in terms of grandparenting. We're babies at grandparenting still.
Yeah.
But I think that role, that it's a grandparent role, but it's an elder role, for both our grandchildren and our children, mm-hmm. in a way that when grandchildren come, changes. And right now, our grandchildren are hands-on, and I don't know, our little grandson, who's 9 months old, can't get enough of Pa. Mm-hmm. Pa walks in the room, and he has eyes for no one else, so you can't travel when he's so little.
Or put him on a backpack and take him out into the world.
But there still is something that is wondrous about even young grandkids. Mm-hmm. They may not be asking profound questions at this stage in their life, though one of them, the 5-year-old, certainly does ask profound questions. But there's also a sense of satisfaction and joy that comes with seeing, for example, well, both of them do and see things for the first time, and the sense of wonderment that emerges from their little existences. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing, trying things for the first time. And their learning curve is so steep, but they manage it with grace and strength. So it's wonderful to watch them grow up. I have no idea what we're going to be doing with teenage grandchildren. That could be a whole different ballpark, and we'll see what that's like.
Well, maybe I could just quickly pick up on that a bit, especially maybe those people who don't have grandchildren or great nieces and nephews. Jack, you mentioned that one of your big concerns is climate change, and that, well, the big move for climate change started with teenagers and young adults, and they are the big drivers. I know they're frustrated now because often they feel they're not being listened to by the powers that be, by the ones who are in control. But they're still the drivers, and I think for us, that is a really strong connection. A few years ago, we went to the legislature here to a rally in September, I believe, that was put on to deal with the whole climate protest and climate change. And it was astounding. I mean, we were by far some of the oldest people there, but the amount of teenagers and young adults that were there was amazing. And it was heartening. Some of that momentum's got lost because of the pandemic, but I think it's still there. And that sort of, to me, that's just another area of connection where we can really interact and connect with, say, younger generations on dealing and discussing very serious matters in society. So,
yeah, I agree totally, Rick. Yet at the same time, Rick and I will cross swords every now and then, which is okay. Hopefully not in a mean-spirited way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The problem with intersecting the interests of young people is that young people are aware enough such that their future is being stolen, according to what many are saying, like Greta Thunberg.
Yeah.
Thunberg, by us, baby boomers, who have sort of wallowed in the affluence of consumption in the last 40, 50 years. And so we, oddly enough, it would be ironic for us to step forward and say we've got the solutions, which we, of course, don't have. Mm-hmm. But so it's a quandary. It's a quandary.
Yeah, well, we're part of the problem, aren't we?
We are the problem,
right? We've created this attitude towards abundance, right? And scarcity, too, even our understanding of scarcity. I mean, we're almost always thinking we're scarce in resources, right? Which is not true. You know, we have much more than we need.
Comparatively,
right? Yeah, that's right. And we tend to forget that, you know, that we get into our own viewpoint of how we see the world, right? And sometimes we have to remind ourselves that, you know, the world we see is not truly the world that's operating out there.
Yeah, and the another major quandary is that we have the capital still as baby boomers to make the transition to alternative energies, for example. Mm-hmm. But the young people, the teenagers who look at their future and seeing it fading away, there's no way they can buy a $40,000 electric vehicle.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what to do as a baby boomer who is relatively affluent other than to just give everything away and go crawl in the corner.
Well, my thought there, Jack, is maybe that's what goes back to what Elaine said, that maybe one of our key roles then is to listen, to engage with them,
absolutely,
to say, we hear you and we take you seriously, and where can we work with you on the solutions and not be sort of self-indulgent or dismissive or even work against that.
And also that we are sorry. We didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah.
We were just simply living the dream. So we thought.
So we thought, but I also think we have to go back to, I mean, I'm one of those people who went to university in the 70s, right? And I recall conversations about climate change back then in geography classes and geology and stuff. So it is there. I don't think we had the willingness, you know, to actually engage in it at that time, right? And I don't think we had the system out there that could push us towards doing that, right?
Yeah.
Because that's another piece that, and I'm not saying I'm not, that I shouldn't be sorry, because I am sorry that we didn't listen and that we didn't, you know, engage in a different way about our world, and that we've made some mistakes, you know. So that's also important.
We were rather preoccupied with things like the Vietnam War.
Oh, yeah.
And the standoff on nuclear weapons with Russia and that whole business that traumatized our generation. So maybe we had other things on our plate.
Well, and we were also working at equality issues for women and trying to raise the profile of those, that range of issues. I think every generation has their things that they have that they need to address and face. And climate change, we had it within our grasp to reverse. And it just did not bubble up to the surface in terms of a priority at that point, I think.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's where part of the negativity and the despair comes in, too, because even when you talk about things like equality and human rights and civil rights, I mean, it seems like we're going backwards. I mean, compared to, say, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, there's much more hostility, violence, division, racism, open misogyny, leaders who promote that are being elected. And so I can see if we feel that and feel rather negative, how would the younger generation also feel?
Or vulnerable people.
Yeah, vulnerable people. And how do we then maybe connect with them and or enter into their coalitions or whatever to sort of be advocates and to also take them seriously and really not give up. I think often when we get to our age, we think, oh, yeah, I've been there, done that. I don't need to engage anymore. I can just give up. And I think that's a real danger when you get to our retirement age. So
health issues are resolved, and I'm not a caregiver so much anymore. What is our role in moving us forward into a brighter future?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and I think there is, I'm hearing there is one. I'm hearing some things we can do.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, you know, Jack, you and I have had this conversation about we are running out of time, right? As we age, right? We've had these and in my head, I always thought by the time I was this age, I probably wouldn't make it to this age, right? And so my time had been running out. But I think that we have to have a stronger sense of urgency to be able to do this advocacy work now than more than ever, right? That we were, you know, we were kind of thinking we had a lot of time to do that work, but we don't.
No,
I mean, our
don't.
Time is running out, and so maybe we have to have a stronger sense of urgency to engage in the world in a different way than we have in the past.
Yeah, and for various types of seniors, because some of us are not innately activists, mm-hmm. but to encourage activism maybe should be part of the senior agenda that we have. Mm-hmm. Amongst seniors, I don't think we need to encourage teenagers, but certainly.
Well, I'm not sure we all need to become activists, but I do think that we can find a role for ourselves that moves us forward into a future that isn't so despairing, if it even is despairing. I'm not sure that's the right word, but it is a future that. As I think about all the work that we did in the 70s and the 80s to create a different paradigm for people to be in the world, I think I just have to get over how hard that was and how painful that was and find a way that I can continue doing that now that I'm retired.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's a critical point is, again, with our age, we don't just look at things as, oh, we just live in the past. You know, you often see some of those posts or some of those sharings, you know, wow, we had the coolest generation and we had the best music and sort of everything's crap now and all we got to do is just sort of sit and live in our memories, rather than, again, look that we have a future and that we have a legacy to pass on and that we can work together with people of different generations and different groups, organizations, to make a positive future, to not just sort of withdraw into either despair, as I mentioned before, or to just sit there and just live in the nostalgic years, you know, and lament the things that we don't have, like, you know, drive-in theaters or, you know, cars that use leaded gasoline or whatever you want to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenges for us as seniors is, especially those of us, and I think I count myself amongst them, not innately activistic, if there is such a word, is affiliations, finding affiliations, collaborations with other people who have shared interests, like the group here in Winnipeg, the Seniors for Climate, that held a wonderful event at the Forks now a couple of months ago, I guess. Mm-hmm. More things like that, drawing us out of our, or I should speak personally, often despair around climate change issues, and looking for alternative ways of acting and collaborating with others with shared interests to deal with the traumatic events that are happening in the world today, locally and abroad.
Well, as you can tell, Seniors in the Building goes in a lot of different directions. We've touched on a fair number of topics in our conversation today, and basically sort of focusing in on what it means to be a senior out there. And we're kind of hoping that in the coming episodes that we can kind of narrow down some of that focus. We've tried to have a conversation which is much more broad today and trying to learn how to do this in a more comfortable way. So we want to say thank you for joining us in our conversation, and we certainly would love to hear from you. And once we get things up and going, we'll be looking for some of your conversations and your input. So we hope that this has been a place where wisdom meets laughter, and all of you listening today have felt part of the conversation. Until next time, this is Seniors in the Building. Thanks for joining us today. You can find us on Spotify under the show name Seniors in the Building and on our YouTube channel Seniors in the Building. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral 4, followed by seniorsinthebuilding lowercase. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, stay curious and hopeful.